children.
It's all for you!
We have such sights to show you.
It's a very big deal.
You're a nerd.
I know. I've had a day, all right? That made me very happy.
Okay, it's true. Enjoy that. Here, I'm going to turn down the volume because we're loud.
Oh, that's good. Oh, our sound was so good last week.
Yeah, it was.
Like, on fucking point.
Yeah.
Barely any edits.
I know, we didn't fuck up.
Like, all the spikes are manageable. They're not like...
I'm not screaming into the microphone.
Oh my god, fucking hilarious. Oh, this is actually really good, too.
Told you.
I dig it.
Yeah, so last night, yeah. I killed 2/3 a bottle of wine, baked cookies, and watched Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It was...
That sounds like an experience.
It was great.
You know, I feel like you made this like your 20s, early 20s kitchen, but that's like a 40s house mom kind of like life right there. Like, oh, the kids are out.
It's true. No, it was great. It was awesome. It was...
Distribute these kids to these cookies to the community. Like,
yeah, it's true. Like, they're like M&M like cookies, and they're like, they're not super sweet. So like,
oh, nice.
I can like dip them in coffee. Deal.
Like an ice cream sandwich kind of deal.
That also...
Yeah, with the M&M cookies in the middle with vanilla. Damn.
You're a genius, Anthony Fuentes.
Oh, I bought these recently, so they are fresh on the mind.
You know who else was thinking they were a genius?
Like everybody in this movie?
No, Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon when they wrote this fucking movie.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
Let's go ahead and get started.
Talk about it. Yay!
Anthony's a little frazzled, my friend.
I've had a weird fucking day.
But let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
In a new location.
In a new location. Yeah. 10 feet away.
No, it's nice, though. We're sitting upward.
We're not sitting on the floor of my apartment.
Yeah, I can dangle my legs. It makes me realize just how short my legs are, because I can't fully palm my foot down. Like, it's...
Really?
Like the bottom. No, it's tippy toes a little... The God heel, I have to work for it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You're my hero in every sense of the word.
I have small shins. Like, that's the shin area is
that's,
tiny.
That's, all right.
Everything
you
else is
what?
Normal.
I'm not going to question it. I'll take your word for it. We moved to my kitchen because I finally got a fucking kitchen table.
Oh,
I've lived here for... I literally got the letter from my landladies about renewing my lease. And I figured now is the time to renew, or now is the time to get a fucking kitchen table.
You're like, well, I'm committing to this now, so
yeah.
Table time.
And also I redecorated my kitchen.
Yes, it looks very, very nice. I dig it. Maybe I'll get drawers, you know, while we're on the upgrade front.
I mean, I got the new TV.
That's true.
I am on the up and up.
Oh my
so.
Gosh, right?
It's all coming up, Milhouse.
It is.
But anyway, today we are talking about The Cabin in the Woods from 2012.
Damn. What a year.
2012. Yeah, I was a junior in high school.
Oh, wow. I was a junior in college. Yay.
When exactly did it come out? Because I'm stupid. Yeah, it came out the later half of 2012, which means I was...
still junior.
Yeah.
Wait, no, was I? Yeah. Yeah, because I'm 13.
Or it was mid. Yeah, so I was still a junior in high school.
Oh my gosh, my life. Yeah. Oh, wow. I joined my fundamental organization the same week this actually came out.
Fundamental.
Or the TV studio where I met Adrian and all my friends.
Okay, you said fundamental organization, and it made it sound like you joined a religious cult.
Oh, did I? Has this not? This is the long con to get you to think more about your future in the afterlife, Alex. Come on.
Have you considered your future?
Have you considered retribution for your sins?
No. I've committed so many. It's hard to keep track.
Don't worry, me too, up until 2012 around April. So...
And then all was forgiven.
Yeah, then all was... Yeah.
Wow. God damn it.
Anyways, so what IMDb has a little thing to say about this. Let's see what the word is on the street. So, five friends go for a break at a remote cabin where they get more than they bargained for, discovering the truth behind the cabin in the woods.
Well, that's a shitty IMDb synopsis.
Where they get, was this like the tagline for like a bunch of second-rate posters on this one?
Well, also like the second, just because of me and my age range in general, like I can't read the lines where they get more than they bargained for.
No, same here. Yeah,
fucking Fall Out Boy.
Chucky's back. Like well, it's no, like this '90s. Ugh.
I think of like Fall Out Boy because like that. There's the Sugar We're Going Down. Like the first opening line is
Oh my god. I was just thinking bad writing. it's a combination of A and B, right? Yeah.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah, no, exactly. This is directed, of course, by Drew Goddard.
Goddard.
I keep thinking the filmmaker, the French filmmaker. Yeah. And it's produced by Joss Whedon. And, of course, written by Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard. Yeah, this is a pretty Whedon-y.
Yeah,
this is like hyper Whedon-y.
I don't even... You
which
know,
we just covered Whedon recently.
We're going to talk about it, but like, if you're drinking, take a drink.
Yeah,
we're drinking.
For the Whedonism, every time it comes up.
I'm going to be shit-faced by the end of the fucking movie, or episode.
You should watch the movie, though. Mm-hmm. It's nice, it's a good movie. So, this one is starring Kristen Connolly as Dana Polk, very Whedon-y name also. Chris Hemsworth as Kurt Vonn.
Pre-Thor.
Like, yeah, right around the Thor time, huh?
We'll get into it.
Okay. All right. Oh, because it was... I see. I know. A little sneak preview there. So then Anna Hutchinson as Jules Loudon. Fran Kranz as Marty Mikulski.
But yes, he's the stoner.
He's the stoner.
Fucking hilarious. Okay, best part of this movie, in my opinion.
He's like the stoner.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But it also has Jesse Williams as Holden McCrea. And Richard Jenkins as Gary Sitterson.
Yes.
Bradley Whitford as Steve Hadley. There's a lot of white dudes.
It's a Joss Whedon movie. Yeah. What do you expect?
And of course, spoiler alerts, if you guys don't want to watch the movie or haven't seen it yet, watch it, because the director is played by, last warning, Sigourney Weaver, which was a surprise.
Literally, when I watched the movie, I had forgotten that, and then I was like, is that Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah, no, I watched it with my roommate, Steve, and we were both just like, oh, fuck, that's okay.
Sigourney Weaver.
Mm-hmm. And this, of course, was released on March 9th at South by Southwest in 2012.
Yes.
And, of course, wider release, April 13th, 2012. Fundamental time in our lives right there. production company, of course, is Mutant Enemy Productions and is distributed by good old horror distributors, motherfucking Lionsgate.
Yeah.
They essentially determined how a decade of horror went. Lionsgate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well... we'll get into it. But.
This one was budgeted at $30 million, which is fucking huge.
That's huge.
That's really big. It only made $66.5 million, which in Hollywood accounting, that is a okay return.
Well, I mean, at least it doubled its budget.
Yeah, but they had to market it too. Like when I think about it, like a double at $30 million, you need to make like over 100, and then you're happy. I don't know. We'll find out again more about this.
We'll talk about it.
Let's go. So, we're going to talk about it right now. Alex.
Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard are no strangers to this podcast. This season, we've covered some of their better-known works. See episodes on Cloverfield and Buffy the Vampire Slayer for more information on
this
them.
This is their season. Jesus.
I know.
Well, that and Del Toro, obviously.
Yeah. Well, the first half was Del Toro. The second half is fucking Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard.
That's crazy.
And Eli Roth.
Yeah, okay. That's true. That makes sense.
Not Eli Roth. Alexandra Aja. We've been seeing his movies.
That's true.
What a season it's been.
Very different than season one with like Carpenter and Stephen King. And what does season three hold? You'll find out in September.
Because we don't know yet.
We don't know yet.
So they decided they wanted to revitalize the horror genre and turn some of its best known tropes on its head. Their goal was to take these tropes established in classic slashers and take them to the ultimate extreme. The result, of course, is A Cabin in the Woods. But what about, these movies did they exactly want to criticize? The good old post 9/11 classic torture porn.
Wait till we actually cover one of these, hostile movies.
I'm waiting, because I was like, we've done, an exploration of torture porn, right? Where we've gotten into, the theory about it. Because we are recording on, theory books about mm-hmm. horror films. And this one in particular is like called The Philosophy of Horror, and it has a great essay on torture porn that I'm about to quote.
Yes.
But I'm like, I searched it and I looked for it. We've never done a deep dive on torture porn, which obviously I realized we're saving.
We're gonna have to. again, remember everybody, this is the last month of the season. I know we said that late last week. But this is the last month of season two.
Yeah, we'll mention this again at the end of the episode, but this is the last month of season two.
So, season three, if you want some torture porn,
let us know. It's just my own personal favorite, but if you guys hate it, that's okay. But it's our podcast, so.
I think it's worth discussion anyways, regardless of the hate, you know, we gotta explore.
Yeah, and you know what, you guys like it when we hate stuff, so.
That's very true.
But like I said, we've discussed torture porn in our Cabin Fever episode a little bit, and mm-hmm. this is also a huge inspiration for the movie. But here's a little refresher. So the essay that I just talked about is called The Justification on Torture Horror by Jeremy Morris. So torture porn, or, you know, torture horror,
okay.
quote, must include depictions of non-interrogational tortures that are realistic, accusatory, and essential to the narrative. That is your bare bones torture porn.
Non-interrogational.
Yeah, you're not trying to get information out of someone.
No, we're trying to get off. That's it.
Exactly. In comparison, a historical drama that features torture as a trauma, for example, doesn't meet this criteria for torture horror, so it doesn't fit.
No, that's more of like a...
It's interrogational versus non-interrogational.
Or historical, I'm sure it's like displaying, like, this is what happened. Ooh, factual.
Yeah. then, you know, in Saw, it's not exactly the same deal.
Sad!
do you want to play?
Yeah.
Morris continues, for torture horror, it is important that the characters, the torturers, and the tortured drive the narrative as the primary source of fear.
Hmm. Okay.
Dun, dun, dun.
Character-based narrative.
Yeah.
But, you know, in...
Tortures.
Torture and masochism. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Whedon described the film as an attempt to revitalize the horror genre and called it a loving hate letter to the genre, saying, quote, it's a serious critique of what we love and what we don't about horror movies. I love being scared. I love that mixture of thrill, of horror, that objectification, identification thing, of wanting definitely for the people to be all right, but at the same time hoping they'll go somewhere dark and face something awful. The things that I don't like are kids acting like idiots, the devolution of the horror movie into torture porn, into a long series of sadistic comeuppances. Drew and I both felt that pendulum had swung a little too far in that direction, unquote.
Damn.
So that's kind of where they're coming from going mm-hmm. into this movie.
Hipsters, gotcha.
Yeah. Exactly. real fucking...
me. Let me just adjust my beret real quick.
God, I'm filled with rage when it... Like, I just... Joss Whedon did a lot for me when I was younger. Like, you know, building my own identity as a person, especially when it came to, like... taking in media, but sometimes I just want to punch him in the fucking face.
Sometimes you can hear, like, the nasally pre-16 Joss Whedon just like, that's not how they did in the comic book.
He's a fun guy. He's an interesting guy.
He did the Avengers, all right?
He did Age of Ultron, okay?
So that's the two sides of Joss Whedon. You get the OG Avengers and Age of Ultron. It's just, you get both. Anyways. But how did this get made, though, Alex? We're going to find out, because I'm going to talk about it right now. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's smiling. You guys can't see it, but it is a look. But, these claws are great. Joss Whedon co-wrote the script with Cloverfield screenwriter Drew Goddard in 3 days. Wow, that's fast.
I can fucking tell.
No, I'm pretty impressed. Jesus, 3 days for this? Okay, well... Interesting. They wrote the screenplay for themselves after both came off failed film projects. They locked themselves up in a hotel room in order to challenge themselves and wrote almost the entire script in 1 weekend. The Kevin Williamson method of screenwriting.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes.
They pulled a Kevin Williamson.
They pulled a Kevin Williamson. See our Scream episode for that one? It is both of them. He's a good guy. And we might cover a little more of him soon.
Yeah. Didn't someone else do something similar?
Probably.
I'm sure.
Yeah. It was like with a writer for Descent or something. Somebody did the same shit. Yeah.
People have been locking themselves into hotel rooms in order to finish scripts many times, I'm sure.
Think about all the locked hotel room scripts that never got sold, though. We're just seeing the highlights.
It's true. This is what made it.
They're like, I locked myself in a room and here I have this. Like, this is shit, dude. This, I can clearly see this.
Get like, there are Cheeto fingerprints on this.
Yeah. There are Cheeto fingerprints. And whiskey stains on the corners. Jesus.
You need help.
But just give it another run through. We'll check it again later. Hollywood. Anyways, despite the fact that they were trying to make a stand against torture porn and called out some tropes in the slasher genre, The Evil Dead, 1984
from 1984, like the movie
1984. Oh, okay. That threw me off a little second there. Resident Evil from 2002 and Cabin Fever from 2002 and Saw from 2004 are all considered influences behind the film. Wait, Saw was 2004?
Three?
I can't remember
that. It's 2003,
2004. It was after Cabin Fever for sure.
Yes.
Oh, what a time. Jeez.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, it's 2003, 2004.
Man, what is happening? Time is weird. Anyways, Goddard also directed the film, making this his directorial debut. Very slick. He had a budget. Goddamn.
Yeah,
$30 million. $30 million. Like, here, buddy.
Okay. Here's the thing. Joss Whedon also produced the movie. Mutant Enemy is his production
yep,
company.
That's right. Arr.
Yeah.
Arr. But Goddard also previously worked with Whedon on, of course, Buffy the Vampire.
The Vampire.
Yeah.
The Vampire Slayer.
It's the like Home Improvement version. Give me the Vampires.
Listeners, I'm about to reach across this table and smack Anthony. You just hear just a
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and of course, Angel as a writer. Again, see our episode on Buffy, and for the vampires. God damn it. Oh, what a day. Anyways, so with a production budget of, again, as previously mentioned, $30 million motherfucking dollars. That's a lot.
Yeah.
Principal photography began on March 9th in 2009 in Vancouver, the good old American substitute city, blank, whatever, USA,
oh,
Canada.
Yeah.
And of course, it concluded on May of 2009. So that was a 2-month shoot. Wow.
March, April, yeah.
Jesus, interesting.
I mean, is that long? Is that short? Is that
this
average? It's
kind of long.
I don't know.
Longish. I don't know.
I don't know these things.
Yeah.
I just know the theory.
Also, I think because we've covered a lot of these films that were like haphazardly put together in like 21 days. When
it's
I see
true.
2 months, I'm
well,
like,
but then
what?
Also, there are times where it's just like certain movies where it's just like, it took 90 days to film this movie. And
that's
then
true.
We're
so
just
2 months seems too reasonable. I don't
is
understand.
Is it average?
I
perhaps so.
Maybe. Maybe that's how things normally work. It is a Whedon production. But concerning the sheer number of creatures to be designed and made for the film, AFX Studios' David LeRoy Anderson estimated that close to 1,000 people were turned into one of around 60 different monster types for the movie. Pretty badass, actually.
Yeah.
A lot of creativity on that, for sure. But the task necessitated renting a much larger facility to use a workspace, as a crew of around 60 people were recruited. Goddamn. The producers told them to commence work on December 15th, 2008, ahead of the official actual January 1st, 2009 start date. They only completed the work by March 9th, 2009 production release date because, as Anderson stated, quote, "We had nearly 70 people at peak, but in effect we had 140 people because everybody had at least 2 jobs. It was crazy. But people had an incredible time. None of us are ever going to forget it. And we're never all going to be in the same room again." That sounds
fun, and it's like summer camp, but
yeah.
Sad.
Well, it just sounded a little miserable to me. Like, I was reading that, and just like, so, like a bunch of sardines together, and like, got the work done, and they're like, well, it brought us closer together. So
sounds like trauma bonding.
Trauma, yes. We translated that whole thing for him. There's some underlying shit there, for sure.
Yeah. We said what he couldn't.
Yes, exactly. He's like, no, it was great, guys. It was great. Like, it was great. Whedon's the man.
Joss Whedon's in the back holding a gun to his head.
Yeah, he's just like, I will mermaid kill you, motherfucker.
I will fucking merman kill you.
But on top of that, they had a star in their midst. Heather Langenkamp.
Langenkamp.
Nancy in, of course, A Nightmare on Elm Street. I should know this.
That's why I was like, it's Langenkamp.
I was pissed off a bunch of horror people. Like, it's Langenkamp.
That's why I had to immediately correct you.
That's good. That's good. Thank you. Take another sip. Serves as one of the members of the actual makeup crew that created the different monsters for the film. Langenkamp underwent the pseudonym of Heather L. Anderson for the production. She didn't even know the name?
No. Because also, like, I've seen her now, and obviously no one looks like they did when they were,
hot shit back in the day. Yeah.
But also, her husband is also a special effects guy, and they were both working on the film. So.
Interesting.
Really cool stuff. I had no idea she worked on this movie, and I was like, that's so cool.
That is pretty cool.
Because also, imagine if, like, the press found out that, like, Heather fucking Langenkamp was, like, associated with this movie. They would have thought she was going to be in the movie.
Yeah.
Because, like, she's just like, no.
Cabin in the Woods is gearing to have an all-star horror icon.
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, and they're just like, can you, like, not talk about the surprises? But the underground complex, elevators, and control room were all sets. Many of the scenes that take place in the control room were shot on location in an actual office building. Office building. I can say words. As such...
Did I cut you off?
No, it's fine. I had nuggets before this. I'm good. But as such, the production team had to shoot many of the scenes at night when the location was, of course, vacant.
I really like that they're like, okay, everyone's gone home. Now we can take over and film our weird monster movie.
Yeah. Make sure all the blood effects are gone by the morning. This is an insurance building.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Because in insurance buildings, they do sacrifice people. So they didn't care about blood.
My mom has worked in insurance for 20-something years, maybe 30.
She can probably attest to it.
She's probably sacrificed somebody. So yeah. No, I am. Like, our house is pretty nice. But production designer Martin Wist referred to Stanley Kubrick and commented, quote, "It's very high-tech industrial and it's a brand new building. Never been shot in before. I wanted the elevators to be without any controls, to almost feel like a glamorized freight elevator. The lobby, I wanted it to look slightly utilitarian, contemporary, and institutional. Sharp and almost characterless." End quote. Yeah, nails it.
So the elevator shot from The Shining and then the elevator shot in this movie are very similar.
Very, very one-to-one, yeah.
And I was like, I can see it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about it, but I can see it.
In the future, we will see. But the actors had to audition using scenes specifically written for each character. And all right, well, that seems like a normal process.
I think they probably were just like, this is super specific.
Yeah, you need to be this person.
Fucking Joss Whedon.
Guy came in all high and shit. But Jamie Lee Curtis was considered for the role of the director. It actually ultimately just went to Weaver, though. But Jamie Lee Curtis kind of would have been the
shit.
That would have been the shit.
If they were... Okay, because here's the thing. I love Sigourney Weaver, and she did an amazing job.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to, like, you know, shit on her performance. However, if they were trying to make a stance against, like, slasher movies,
Jamie
like
Lee Curtis,
OG Scream Queen, Jamie Lee Curtis, like, come on. Although, at this point, like, in 2009, when this movie was being filmed, like, she was probably, like, yeah, because she'd come back to acting at that point.
I still think Jamie Lee Curtis is just one of those actresses that's just hard to get for your movie.
Yeah.
She's not.
She's just like... I have better shit to do.
And if she's doing schlock, she's gonna do schlock because she chose to do it. Like, she's not gonna
you
be like...
You can't convince her to do to do schlock.
Yeah, no. She's not like... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's electing for everything. Sigourney Weaver, I'm sure, has a very similar standard. But I also think Sigourney Weaver's maybe a little bit better of an actor, too.
It's true. Well, I think... And this is just from what I've seen, because, like... I don't just from my own vibes that I get. I feel like Sigourney Weaver will just be like, sure.
Yeah.
This seems like whatever. I'm Sigourney fucking Weaver. Whatever.
1 week shoot. Fine, dude. Sign me up.
Right. Because she's also in the movie for like 10 minutes. Like, that was probably like a day.
Yeah, exactly. In like one set. She's in one set. That's it.
One set, one outfit. Like, it's
minimal special effects. She's like, probably not on screen for those. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine. Like, she's just like, whatever.
Like, will you be able to shoot around the body double? Yeah, we're fine. Cool. Cha-ching.
Cha-ching. I will take my check. It's like Doug Jones. Like, yeah. When he was just like, it was a paycheck movie for him. Mm-hmm. Like, he's just like, a thank you. I will take my check. I will be getting into my expensive car and I will be going.
Yep. Thank the makeup team for me. I'll send him some gifts.
Yeah.
But during the lake scene, the only student not to jump into the lake is Marty, who remains fully clothed and on the dock. This was partially due to Franz Kranz noticeably being in as good, if not better, shape than the other male students.
I fucking love this.
That's so weird. In the commentary for the film, the writers joked that he was ripped like muscular Jesus. And asserted that if Marty were shown being that fit, it would actually ruin his character. So this is partly also why Marty wears baggier clothes than the other students. That makes so much sense.
I think that's very silly.
That was convincing, though, because like I would not have expected that character to be more ripped than the other dudes.
Oh, yeah. More ripped than Chris fucking Hemsworth?
Exactly.
I would have been like, oh, no.
But this is like lanky, skinny Chris Hemsworth.
It's true. Like,
he's not Thor.
He's not Thor yet.
No. He's like basketball player Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, of course, speaking of Marty, the thermal coffee mug / bong was a fully functioning mug and bong as portrayed in the film, the prototype of which cost $5,000 to make.
Yeah.
Jeez. But speaking of Marty again, and his stoner activities, Franz Kranz received extensive prop and behavior training in order to capture the stoner persona of Marty.
Okay, first of all, I want this fucking job.
Seriously.
Can I just continue reading? Like, I'm pissed.
That's a weird one. He received a 2-hour joint rolling session and a separate bong lighting session from expert consultants.
Expert consultants!
Jesus.
That's what gets me. I'm just like, expert consultants. Like, the amount of air quotes I'm putting up right now, listeners, is unreal.
Okay.
Can someone pay me thousands upon thousands of dollars to teach actors how to light bongs and roll joints? Because I can do that all day.
I think they didn't credit them because it's probably just Matthew Lillard. Like, okay, I know. The makeup girl, yeah, fine. Just don't put me in the movie because then the press is really going to be on your ass. But this is how you roll a blunt.
God, I'm angry.
That is insane. But the prop crew even designed the film's own brand of rolling papers, smelling Buddha papers. Jesus.
Yeah.
That's fun. I dig it.
Yeah, they created, like, basically it's all custom weed paraphernalia for this movie.
That's, like, a good brand, though. I like that smiling Buddha shit. I can dig it.
I'm just like, how do I get this job?
Yeah.
I live close enough to LA.
No, this is somebody's friend. They're
just
telling me.
Like, oh, yeah. This is because, the fact that it's just like expert consultants. Mm-hmm. This is someone that just happened to show up onto the set that day smelling like pot. And they were just like, you were going to teach him how to roll a fucking joint.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. It's just like fucking, I'm just an intern. Well, you know.
You smell
you
like
get a
it's
title
either,
now.
I know. It's either take this drug test or teach him how. Those are your options, buddy.
$30 million, dude. We can't risk not hiring non-union here. Like, we got you. Just do it.
All right? 2 hours.
This is your SAG card, right?
This is your SAG card.
But during production, MGM saw the dailies of a scene where Chris Hemsworth instructs his friends. On the basis of his performance, they signed him on for Red Dawn of 2012. Wow. 2 days later, Hemsworth was also chosen to play the lead Thor in, of course, Thor, 2011. Wow. This is a big year for him. Jesus.
Yeah.
Both Red Dawn and Cabin in the Woods would eventually be delayed for several years when MGM went bankrupt. I remember that shit.
Mm-hmm.
And were finally released a year after Thor. Fuck. To capitalize on that star power. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Damn. That's, oof, what a, he's like, oh, what, MGM went under, my life's over, my career. No, you're the God of Thunder now, sir. All right, well, cool. There's more Hemsworth horror, I'm sure. Is there?
No.
No?
Maybe? No. I mean, he hasn't been in a lot.
No, he really hasn't.
I mean, the only other thing that I remember off the top of my head that he's been in is, like, the 30 seconds he was Kirk's dad in the beginning of Star
That's
Trek.
That's right. Also 2009.
Yeah. Wow.
A year. Jesus.
He got that gig, and then he got Cabin in the Woods, and
fucking
then
Red Dawn right after that, and then Thor after that.
Yeah, Red Dawn was shit, though.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Because, like, I don't even like the original.
No, it's like 80s, like, hey, if you were in the 80s, you'd love this movie. Like, well, we're not, and better movies have been made.
It wasn't good.
It's kind of stupid.
It was.
No, I agree. And then the last fact, of course, here, when Jules kisses the wolf head on the wall. Very, very weird scene. The wolf's tongue, which was made of silicone and removable, is covered in powdered sugar to give it a dusty look and to make the scene tolerable for Anna Hutchinson. It's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, it's like literally...
No, I don't...
When I was watching this movie, I literally had to stop what I was doing and be like, watch this disgusting scene.
But like...
And then who I was with, he was just like, I'm so glad I didn't go to college in the United States. And I was like, we don't make out with wolves in the United States either.
I gotta say though, this was the most 80s slasher scene. Like I was like watching it, I'm just like, okay, yeah, I can see it in a Jason movie. That is a total, like...
Yes, for sure. Because, like, of course, fucking Stoner Me over here was just like, I dare you to make out with the wolf.
Very good impression, by the way. Yes.
And she was just like, okay.
Yeah, that whole portion of the film, super 80s.
They were playing to their audience.
They did.
Like, they were playing to a very specific niche of their audience.
I feel like this is one of those scenes that in that 3-day time period where they wrote it, they're like, they knocked it out in 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Like, this is like, they were like going back and forth over like lunch about it.
They're just, yeah, exactly. So, but if Cabin in the Woods, we eventually have to be released.
It had to come out eventually.
How'd it go?
So. Cabin in the Woods was slated for wide release on February 5th, 2010, and then it was delayed until January 14th, 2011, so the film could be converted to 3D.
I hate this post-Avatar era of,
cinema. Where they're just like, make it all 3D.
Yeah, make it all 3D. The horror film, make it 3D!
However, on June 17th, 2010... MGM announced the film would be delayed indefinitely due to ongoing financial difficulties with the studio.
This is why we have The Hobbit.
These plans were eventually scrapped, and the film was, of course, released only in 2D.
Interesting.
Oh, I lost my place.
It's got enough special effects to manage a 3D.
Some shots, I'm like, this was meant to be a 3D shot. So after the film was additionally shelved due to the studio's bankruptcy, even director Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon had little faith in it until Lionsgate saw the finished film, loved it, and picked it up for release.
There you go, man. Lionsgate always saves the fucking day.
It's true. In an interview with Creative Screenwriting, Goddard focused on the advantages of delayed release, saying, quote, Lionsgate came along and they were the best possible home for that movie. Had the bankruptcy not happened, they wouldn't have been the right fit with the right people. Yes, it took 2 years longer than we wish it would have taken, but Lionsgate didn't make us change a frame and believed in what we were trying to do. If I had complained too much when MGM went bankrupt, we would have hurt ourselves. We had just held firm that we believed in the movie and that we would find the right home and time, and it did. It's hard, but you have to be very patient in Hollywood, unquote.
That makes, with a lot of the shit we've talked about on this podcast,
Also trying really hard not to giggle after delayed release.
Eventually it was finished to completion. And boy, did it explode on release.
I'm 12 at heart.
Okay. Delayed release.
I just had to get that out. I'm going to take a drink.
Our satisfaction with the effect was...
Stop it.
I know.
I made the joke.
I couldn't finish it myself.
Stop it. I made the joke. You ran with it. Yeah, let it go.
There's so many more options.
The world premiere, finally, was on March 9th, 2012 at the South by Southwest Film Festival in Austin, Texas.
God damn.
So finally, we finally fucking get there.
Jesus.
Immediately after, as an early preview screening with a fan Q&A, the first question Drew Goddard was asked was, will there be a sequel? To which he responded, have you seen the ending of my movie? Unquote. According to Goddard, the scene that tested highest with audiences was the Merman sequence.
Fuck yeah, that's the best one.
It was so fucking dumb. Anyway, so The Cabin in the Woods grossed $42.1 million in North America and $24.4 million in other territories for a total worldwide gross of $66.5 million against a production budget of $30 million, as we previously discussed.
I wonder how much of that was, like, bullshit, like, okay, we're in the middle of our 3D process here, and that's $10 million, and they're like, oh, we're bankrupt.
Yeah, with MGM?
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it's, like, actually a $30 million. It didn't look at $30 million. It looks like a $19 million movie.
That's a very specific number, and you're probably right. So, the film opened in North America on April 13th, 2012, opening with $5.5 million, and went on to gross $14.7 million on its opening weekend in the United States in 2,811 theaters, finishing third at the box office. It closed on July 12th, 2012 at $42 million, like we mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
So, on Rotten Tomatoes, the site gave the film a rating of 92% based on 283 reviews with an average rating of 7.87 out of 10. The site's critical consensus reads, "The Cabin in the Woods is an astonishing meta feat, capable of being funny, strange, and scary, frequently all at the same time," unquote. Mm.
I agree.
Sure.
Not really scary.
It's... Okay.
No.
You know what? We'll wait. Roger Ebert of the Chicago Sun-Times gave the film 3 out of 4 stars, saying that, quote, "The Cabin in the Woods has been constructed almost as a puzzle for horror fans to solve. Which conventions are being toyed with? Which authors and films are being referred to? Is the film itself an act of criticism?" Unquote.
That had to have been one of his last reviews.
Oh, yeah, because this was in, like, 2000, yeah. And
dude.
Yeah.
No, he was, yeah. Wow, he that's was, insane.
Like, that's when I saw that. I was like, there's no way he did. And I'm like, oh.
Damn.
Peter Travers of Rolling Stone gave the film 3.5 out of 4 stars, calling it fiendishly funny. Travers praised Kristen Connolly and Fran Kranz for their performances and wrote, quote, "By turning splatter formula on its empty head, Cabin shows you can unleash a fire-breathing horror film without leaving your brain or heart on the killing floor," unquote. Wow.
Well, very elaborate, Travers. Jesus.
It's very wordy.
I'm a film critic, man.
I know. Keith Phipps of the AV Club addressed, quote, "The difficult challenge of putting across a satirical film with a serious body count. Cabin touches on everything from The Evil Dead and Friday the 13th to mechanized mutilations of the Saw series while digging deeper into the Lovecraftian roots of horror in an attempt to reveal what makes the genre work. It's an exercise in metafiction that, while providing grisly fun, never distances viewers, and it's entertaining, while asking the same questions of viewers and characters alike. Why come to a place you knew all along was going to be so dark and dangerous?" Unquote.
Holy run-on sentence, Batman. Jesus fucking Christ.
Saying that in one breath, I was like...
Keith Phillips. What? I loved AV Club back in the day, but I was like... I don't know, maybe English skills weren't that great?
No, okay, most places that I look online have widely regarded the fact that the AV Club has just taken, like, a nosedive.
Oh, no, they were so good until, like, 2014.
Really?
And they fucking tanked bad. Like, bad.
That sucks. It's just, like, the writers that they have?
Quality went down, the articles went down, their site layout was all fucky. Like, they went stupid. They got bought out by, you know, like, when they get... bought out by a big company, and they're and just like, we're going to revamp everything.
And it's going to be for the better. Yeah. And it wasn't for the better.
Oh, it was shit. Ah. It was so bad. But this is the Prime era. Who the fuck is this guy?
Betsy Sharkey.
Okay.
Of the Los Angeles Times believed the film was, quote, "an inside joke," and also said, quote, "the laughs in the film come easily. The screams, not so much," unquote. All right.
Betsy Sharkey. Best sequence was the merman, though.
David Rooney of The Hollywood Reporter remarked, quote, "it's just too bad the movie is never much more than a hollow exercise in self-reflexive cleverness that is not nearly as ingenious as it seems to think," unquote.
All right, Rooney.
Snarky. All right, Letterboxd time.
Oh, the good, yes, our favorites.
This movie is sitting pretty at 3.5 stars out of 160,000 reviews.
Fucking
so that's
Christ.
Not bad considering the fact that there was like a 5,000 review.
No, Quarantine had less than 1,000. It was 850 reviews.
Yeah, it was like tiny.
Yeah. This is 160, god damn.
160,000, yeah.
Jesus.
Rudy with 4 stars. I wish I was as self-aware as this movie is.
Oh, me and you both, Rudy.
Grooveman with 4.5 stars. Quote, seeing Richard Jenkins yell, fuck you, to a screen filled with 9-year-old Japanese girls is extremely funny to me. This is the most fun I've had watching a film this year. Unquote.
I love that. Yeah.
It was funny.
That was good.
Bethany with 2 stars. Quote, after countless rewatches, I have finally decided on the fact that this film is not good, and that's okay. Unquote.
Interesting.
Persia, cherry emoji, with 4 stars, or 3 stars. She's cute, but she's no Scream, 1996. Unquote.
Oh, back to the old Williamson. Okay.
I mean, they pulled a Williamson.
They did. That's how we got the movie. Yep.
In true Whedon vs. fashion, Amy Acker and Fran Kranz were in another Joss Whedon project called Dollhouse, starring Eliza Dushku, by the way. And
yeah,
that had at least one really solid season. I think there's like 2 or 3, but I only remember the first one. I watched it live on TV when I was like 12.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
Because I was obsessed with Eliza Dushku.
That's yeah. I always remember the promos, but I think the promos were enough. I'm like, oh, she's pretty.
I was like into it. The Cabin in the Woods was released on DVD and Blu-ray in North America on September 18th, 2012. Both the DVD and Blu-ray feature an audio commentary by Goddard and Whedon, several featurettes, a documentary about the making of the film, and a Q&A session from the 2012 WonderCon convention panel of the film.
Well, someone paid for those Blu-ray features. Like, that seems like the bare bones, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're just like, we gotta put something on there.
I know. Gotta fill up space. So in true, I just want to talk about the plot of this movie, because
mm-hmm.
it's a fun...
Normally we have a... But this is one of those where I kind of feel it's necessary to actually go play by play on this bad boy, because it is a very distinctive plot.
Yeah.
There's... Yeah. There's,
it'll be fun.
Exactly. So, the movie's opening was a deliberate attempt by Goddard and Whedon to confuse the audience and make them think they walked in to see the wrong movie. Interesting.
It worked.
Yeah.
When I started, I'm like, had I started watching this and then, like, it was, like, the middle of the fucking movie? Like, I thought I fucked up. Among the possible choices on the facility's betting board are the following. Strap in.
All right, let's see it.
Werewolf. Alien beast. Mutants. Wraiths. Zombies. Reptilius. Clowns. Witches. Sexy witches. Demons. Hellord. Angry molesting tree. Giant snake. Deadites. Mummy. The Bride. The Scarecrow Folk. Snowman. Dragon Boat. Dragon Bat, not Boat.
Dragon Boat.
Like, what the fuck is that?
What's that off the shore over there? It's snarling fire.
Oh, The Lighthouse would have been a very different movie.
That's a good one.
Vampires. Dismemberment Goblins. Sugar Plum Fairy. Merman. The Reanimated. Unicorn. Horon, Sasquatch/Wendigo/Yeti. Which, by the way, those are all very different things, but
yeah.
That's another...
In one shot, though, that would have been interesting.
Anyway, dolls, zombie redneck torture family, the doctors, jack-o'-lantern, giants, twins, and Kevin.
Kevin. Oh,
so
okay.
So let's get to that sweet, sweet plot, shall we?
Let's do it. That makes sense. So, in an underground laboratory, engineers Sitterson and Hadley discuss plans for a mysterious ritual after a similar operation in Stockholm has just ended in failure.
Dun, dun, dun.
Mm-hmm.
Dramatic. So meanwhile, American college students Dana, Jules, Kurt, Holden, and Marty...
Jeez, basic-ass motherfuckers.
That's true. ...are spending their weekend at a seemingly deserted cabin in the forest. From the lab, Sitterson and Hadley remotely control the cabin and manipulate the students by intoxicating them with mind-altering drugs that have effects such as hindering rational thinking and increasing libido.
Okay, so this whole beginning portion of the movie has the tropey scenes. Like, they go to the gas station and, like, the fucking... They piss off the person who owns it and they do all this shit.
Oh, gosh, what is he called? He's called, like... Oh, fuck. I forgot his name, but it's funny. The Harbinger, that's his name. But, like, you know, he's, like, you know, it's very tropey. And mm-hmm. then also we get very clear establishments of, like, who these characters are in terms of classic horror tropes.
They are 2D as fuck.
Oh, for sure.
They are,
sure.
like, 2D.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You're, like, well, and, like, they kind of try to circumvent that in the beginning, mm-hmm. like, with Chris Hemsworth's character. Like, they're just, like... what are these fucking books? And then he's like, you know, if you really want to get to, like, the meat of the material, you should read this book instead. And yeah. It, like, shows that he's, like, kind of smart. And I'm like, shut the fuck up, Chris Hemsworth. You're a himbo.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, so Dana's the main character, right?
Yes.
Dana, she's essentially, like, the blank canvas of the movie.
Yes,
like,
she is.
No, she's a vanilla ice cream sandwich.
Yeah. For sure. She's, like, every girl that Drew Goddard and Joss Whedon wanted to fuck in college, but didn't. For sure.
Yeah, the personality just doesn't matter. It's like, she looks like this.
She's pretty.
Yep, she's... Yeah, and then Jules, of course, is our party girl.
Yes.
Yeah, our wild
Let's call
girl.
Her fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's just like, I just dyed my hair blonde. And it's just like, that's a lie, but sure. Let's go with that. And then, of course, Marty...
Marty's the stoner boy.
Yes, he's the stoner. And then we have 2D only in boy form in the form of Holden.
Holden is that Dana's love interest?
Or, yes.
Yeah, so that's like the biracial dude.
Yes.
That's just like...
The one who I only recognize from Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, which, is he that?
Yeah, okay. He's in Grey's Anatomy.
No, he's the equivalent of Dana for sure.
Yeah, he's...
Like, he's blank as fuck.
Yeah, I'm just like, okay. Like, he's the self-projection of everyone sitting in the movie theater, like, who's there with their date.
Yeah. Like, I'm a good guy, right? Like, yeah.
Ugh. Cool. My skin just started crawling. Thanks for saying that, Anthony. God!
But of course, Kurt, Mr. You know what? Chris Hemsworth still has a screen presence, though, out of everybody.
Funnily enough, he is not a bad guy in this movie. Like,
no.
He's not a dickhead. Like, he's not, like, you know, he's a lovable jock.
He has that bravado.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know we know him as Thor and stuff, but even in this movie, he's just like, fuck you. Like yeah, he gets away with it.
Well, he has that lovable jock energy. Like, again, he's like a golden retriever. He's a himbo. Like, yeah. There's no, like... And there was another Letterboxd review where there was just like, I see Chris Hemsworth has been typecast since day one.
Yeah. Like, he... No, 100%. And of course, Sitterson and Haley are both like the most cynical kind of nerdy like guys you can get at running the lab.
Yeah, they're just like driving around on basically a golf cart.
Yeah.
Like, just like, well, just another day in the office, huh, Jeff? And it's just like... What is going on?
For like a ritual, it's so weird.
Well, it, yeah, so I was talking about this with the guy I was watching the movie with, and he was like, it's like they're like basically making hell corporate. And it's kind of, it reminded me a little bit of Your Pretty Face is Going to Hell.
I still haven't seen that.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much like, it's
is that
corporate hell. Like,
okay, that's pretty cool. I dig that. I dig the concept.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna have to watch that actually.
It's very funny.
It's on HBO Max, I'm going for
well,
it.
Well, it's on Adult Swim, so...
I gotta figure it out. Okay, I have a login, but I hate their app.
Well, if you, I mean, you have Hulu, yeah?
I do.
It's on Hulu.
Yay, there we go. You should have started with Hulu.
I liked Hulu. I liked watching you squirm.
Yeah, me just like, fuck, I gotta go to Adult Swim. All right, so the lab departments take bets on what kind of monster will attack the students. You can discuss the failures... of international operations. So, in the cabin cellar, the group finds many bizarre objects in a great scene, including the diary of Patience Buckner, a cabin resident abused by her sadistic family. Dana recites the incantations from the diary and inadvertently summons the zombified Buckner family.
All right. So, this scene is hilarious
it's
in
great.
So many ways
it's
because
great.
This is they're playing truth or dare.
Mm-hmm.
This is when Jules makes out with the fucking taxidermied wolf head.
Yeah,
it's stupid, but they all go like it's and because then everyone's calling out what Dana because they're just like because Kurt. Oh, this is like Kurt's douchier moment. He's just like he basically calls what's gonna happen. He's like,
yeah.
You're gonna say truth. Then you're gonna, like, and then you're gonna chicken out, and then you're gonna wanna do a dare, and then, like, basically he's just like, you're a little bitch. Like, that's basically what he said in not
It's his most jockey moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, obviously, in the most Evil Dead moment possible, the cellar door just pops open, and they're just like, I dare you to go down into the... And it's just like, okay.
Ugh.
That's stupid. Like, again... It's every single horror trope where everyone's screaming at the screen, like, this is stupid, get the fuck out of there.
I love how they have so many options, though. Yes. There's like so many different ways it can go.
Yes, they go down there and they're just like playing with everything. And then, of course, Kurt is holding like the shell that'll summon the merman. And What's-His-Face is just like, he had it in his hand.
I love how this is their only hope, too, because the Japanese one went to shit. And they're always beating them every year, apparently. Yes. And like, no deaths. Zero deaths. Like, are you kidding me? This is all on us now? Like, that shit's awesome.
It is awesome. It also was fantastic to see the birth of a meme.
Which meme?
The little girl holding the frog saying, "The evil is defeated."
I don't remember that meme.
This was a meme it was a GIF on Tumblr for many, many years.
I was not a Tumblr dude.
Of course you were.
No, this one.
You were in college when I was Reddit. In high school. That does not matter.
that's prime Reddit time right there. Yeah.
I mean, you might have seen it on Reddit.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like the crowds were way different back then. They were really different. There was like an allegiance back then.
I never really went on Reddit because I was the only association I ever heard was like alt-right.
No, not until later on.
Really?
No, this is like the Wild West days of the Reddit. So it was actually super liberal.
Interesting.
But then they, I don't know. It changed. It changed big
it
time.
It all changed yeah, it when changed the Fire huge. Nation attacked.
Yeah, no, yeah. That was on a Reddit. That was a Reddit meme right there. For sure. Yeah.
Well, that was an everything meme.
That's true. That was a,
but,
that one.
Yeah, no, the gif of like the little girl holding the frog in her hand saying "the evil is defeated" was like a very common like reaction gif.
Interesting.
Used on the internet.
Totally have no idea. Huh. Interesting.
We all learned something.
And we did. Yay. The more you know. Rainbow.
Anyway, Hadley releases pheromones to induce Kurt and Jules to have sex outside. Hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They are then attacked by zombies, and Jules is decapitated while Kurt escapes to alert the group. This is also just very stereotypical.
Yeah.
And then, anyway. Marty discovers concealed surveillance equipment in his room before being dragged off by a zombie.
I love this part of it.
Because this is also where they're just like, the weed should be, like, you know, altering him or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just like, he altered the weed. Like, yeah. He's doing something to the weed so that it's making him immune to all of their weird
right.
charms oh or whatever. My.
That's the best. He's, like, too good at drugs. And they're just like, this guy's, like, way past our league here.
He got an A+ in drug school.
He majored
in joint rolling, apparently. He took a 2-hour class on it.
Oh, my gosh.
But I just think it's funny because, like, this is also, as a little side note, all throughout the movie, he's making these little, like, we've been selected, like, very,
yeah.
like, when you're high and you say dumb shit and, like, mm-hmm. everyone's just, like, and when you're the only one who's high in a room.
Yeah.
Which, first of all, never be that guy.
Mm-mm.
Never be that person.
It's the worst.
When you are the only person who's high and with the, like, in a group of people, because then you can't enjoy yourself.
No. And at least have them be, like, really drunk.
If they're drunk, it's fine. But, like, if you're the only one, because then you just, like, look like the stoner dumbass.
You're like, I'm just trying to, like, you know, long day, man. Like,
I'm just trying to fuck it on wine.
Mm-hmm. We're all watching the same movie. It's fine. Lights are off. It's cool.
But then, you know, you start saying shit like this, where it's just like we've been selected or, you know, it's the end of times or what the fuck ever.
I mean, he was right, though.
He was right!
But, of course, the lab workers learn that the right in Japan has also failed, which I mentioned previously, meaning that the American right is humanity's last hope.
They're all going to die.
Yep. Kurt, Holden, and Dana attempt to escape in their RV, but Citizen triggers a tunnel collapse to block them. Damn.
Yeah, this is also very, like, office-y. Like,
yeah.
A lot of this movie gives me really big, like, working in a big office building where mm-hmm. it's just, I worked in an office, like an actual fucking office for like 7 months and I fucking hated it. Like, it's sucked.
Yeah, it's a different kind of vibe for sure.
But no, like that where it's just like you have to like wear the, you know, wear the uniform and wear your name badge, and then if mm-hmm. you like if you want to do something, you gotta fill out a form and send it to the higher ups.
You gotta have documentation of this shit.
The bureaucracy of it all drives me bonkers.
I can see in your eyes right now. It is there is a legit fury. It's true. A subdued fury, but it's definitely
it's
there.
There. Like, it's okay. It's a slow burning fire within me, but like I hate bureaucracy with a passion.
Oh boy. Yeah.
And I love seeing it implemented in this movie for like evil.
Yeah. Right?
Where bureaucracy is like the evil force in this movie. And watching them like run around and be like, what do you mean they didn't get the order for the tunnel collapse? And it's like, we didn't get the order for the tunnel collapse. I don't know what you fucking want to hear from me. And it's just like, I love that shit. Like, yep. Because like, it resonates with everyone who's had to work in a stupid fucking office.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, we didn't sign up by what deadline? Like, you didn't even tell us we had to sign up. Are you shitting me? Now we got to actually like talk to the people. Oh, okay.
And then he's running and he's just like, now I have to go to fucking demolition. It's great.
Oh, it's hurting. But
anyway, if you guys haven't seen this movie, this is not going to be making any sense. So yeah. I hope you watch the movie.
I agree. And especially this particular scene, because Kurt attempts to jump a ravine on his motorcycle to seek help from the other side, of course, because the tunnels collapse, but crashes into a force field and falls to his death in amazing death scene.
This is so sad.
The buildup was awesome. Because it's like, he's going to, like,
Well, it also, it's set up that, like, he knows he's going to make the jump.
Mm-hmm. But, like, just the fact that it's, like, he has that hero's music and low-angle shots.
And, like, it's just, like, him. And it's very, like, obviously, like, pre-Thor. But I'm just like, you look like a fucking superhero. Mm-hmm. And he's just like, even if I have to limp, I'll get help and I'll come back. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up, Thor.
No, my roommate Steve lost it.
Really?
He fucking lost it when this scene happened.
Was he, like, laughing?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Just because he hits and just skids all the way fucking down nasty.
He just, it's awesome. Oh, it's great. He just slides. It's awesome. So, Holden and Dana realize that their experience is staged and they retreat to the RV. As they drive back to the cabin, Holden is killed by a zombie and the RV is driven into a lake. Dana swims ashore and is also attacked. The lab employees, seeing that Dana is the only survivor, celebrate the success of the right, but are interrupted by a phone call from the director, pointing out that Marty is still alive.
Mm-mm-mm. I love this part of the film,
because they're all drinking celebrating. And mm-hmm. they're just like explaining like as like the virgin can live as long as she suffers and as long as she's the last to die, if she dies at all. And I'm just like, this is like, I mean, you know, it's obviously like the rules of horror films just translated into like an actual right.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind
of
cool.
It's like part of the plot, which is pretty cool. But Marty saves Dana and takes her to a hidden elevator he discovered under a grave. They descend into the lab and discover a large collection of monsters of various types locked in cages. Dana correlates them with the objects in the cabin cellar and realizes that the objects determine which monsters are released.
And this is when shit goes sideways. Mm-hmm. This is when she's like looking at like the deadite who's holding like the little like box.
Yeah.
Obviously is a mm-hmm. Cenobite. Like it's a play on fucking Hellraiser. Like it's obvious. If you are a fan of horror, a lot of this movie is obvious.
There's good stuff.
If you are not a fan of horror, like the angry molesting tree I talked about earlier, mm-hmm. if you haven't watched The Evil Dead, you would have been like, what are you talking about?
Yep.
But if you've seen The Evil Dead, you would have been like, aha.
It'll be that.
Aha, that makes sense now. So cornered by security personnel, Dana and Marty trigger a purge button, which, by the way, why the fuck do they have that button?
It's a Joss Whedon movie.
True. and release all the monsters, which wreak havoc and slaughter most of the staff. Dana and Marty flee the carnage and discover an ancient temple where they are confronted by the director. She explains that worldwide annual rituals of human sacrifices are held to appease the Ancient Ones, a group of cruel subterranean deities.
Okay, so
there's a lot.
We went through a lot because, like,
this purge thing is like 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's literally just monsters of all different kinds of tropes destroying the bureaucracy,
everything.
Ripping people apart.
This is my favorite sequence in the whole fucking movie.
Oh, I agree.
It's my favorite. Like,
when people get marked.
Oh yeah, and they're just like, my favorite is when like they're going through the guns, and then you just hear like a ding from mm-hmm. the elevators, and then a fuck. And then
bat comes down, like all this shit.
It's great. And then you see like the snakes and you see just blood everywhere. Yeah. It's awesome. Like, it's a blood fest. It's so much fun. Like, I personally love that sequence.
And our office boys die. They get taken out. One gets taken out by the merman.
Yes, and he's the one who really wants to see this merman, and then the other guy, this is mentioned, like, this is like a little, like, I don't know what to call it, but basically it's hinted at throughout the entire movie, where he's just like, you don't want to see a merman, they're fucking ugly. And then he's, like, laying on the floor, and he's, like, completely incapacitated, and then you see, like, a little fucking merman, like, hopping, like, flopping towards him, and he's just like, oh, come on, and then he gets... And then, you know, there's blood that's just blowing out of his blowhole.
Yes, that's the best part.
Apparently, there was a 10-minute sequence of just blood gushing out of his blowhole, but obviously it was shortened.
Yeah, that'd be too much.
Of course.
A little too much.
Of course! 10 minutes? I would have been like, okay, let's do the fucking program.
And of course, Dana actually ends up killing one of the dudes.
Yeah.
And that part I felt a little sad because I kind of liked that guy. But I was just like, oh, you killed a known character because in your way? God damn.
And then if you look really, really carefully in one of the boxes, there's supposed to be, like, a prototype for Reavers, which, if you watch Firefly, those are, like, freaky little cannibals in Firefly, which it's a Joss fucking Whedon production.
Whedon. Of course he'd went
and
to the camera.
He has to, like, combine everything.
Yeah. So, each region has its own ritual, of course, and the American ritual involves the sacrifice of 5 slasher film archetypes. The whore, Jules. The athlete, Kurt, the scholar, Holden, the fool, Marty, and the virgin, Dana. The order of the killings is arbitrary, as long as the whore dies first and the virgin dies last or survives. And I love how it's just like, me, the virgin? She's like, we'll take what we can get in this environment. Like,
we'll take what we can get.
Ugh. And it's, of course, Sigourney Weaver as the director.
Who yes,
just
of
surprises.
Course. Oh, like, and she just steps on the screen and then immediately, like, it's just like, commands the entire fucking
does.
Movie. And
yeah.
it's just like... You're such a badass.
Fucking Ripley.
I know. Mm-hmm. So good. So the director urges Dana to kill Marty to complete the ritual and spare humanity. Dana is suddenly attacked by a werewolf while patients Bruckner. One of the zombies kills the director, deciding that humanity is not worth saving. Dana and Marty share a joint while awaiting their fate. The temple floor collapses, and a giant hand emerges, destroying the facility and the cabin itself. And that's a fucking movie.
I like the ending. It's just like, oh, it all goes to shit. Cool.
And like, they're sitting there, like, literally, like, it's very... I like the ending, because, like, they're sitting at the steps, like, in between their respective little, you know... temple thingies,
yeah,
covered in blood, sharing a joint, just like, it is what it is. Like, they would rather just end humanity than kill each other,
right?
Which I think it's kind of cool.
I mean, she was gonna.
I mean, yes,
she was like right there, ready to finish him off.
And well, and then she apologizes and she's like, "I'm sorry, I almost killed you," and he's just like, "But you didn't." So cool.
I like that character. It's
yeah.
Good.
So that's the movie. Let's discuss this.
Okay, so thoughts on the film.
Okay, I have conflicting feelings about this movie.
How? What happened? What's wrong?
You're very concerned. So, I really want to like this movie, but also, I feel like I'm being played.
In what sense?
Like, this movie was absolutely made for fans. Like, if you are a fan of horror movies, you will like this movie.
Oh, yeah.
However, that being said, I feel like I'm being pandered to as a horror fan.
Oh, I see. That
you
makes
sense.
You
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think...
That play their hand too hard or what?
Yes.
Interesting.
I think I see what they were trying to do. In my opinion, I think some parts of it are a little over the top. But I think that's also kind of what they were going for.
Yeah.
So I can appreciate, like, I appreciate the movie. Like, I totally understand that they were going for this, like, over the top, like, in your face. Like, look at how, like, not, like, I mean, yeah, look at how outdated and, like, kind of, like, condescending these tropes that we've kind of just learned to accept are.
Yeah.
That I appreciate. But also, I also feel condescended to as a viewer.
Really?
Well, it feels like when I'm watching it, like, I'm being mansplained.
Like fan service?
I feel like I'm being mansplained, too, by Joss Whedon. Like, I feel like Joss Whedon is, like, explaining to me how horror movies work.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And that could just be me, and that could just be because I have problems with Joss Whedon.
Maybe, I don't know.
My views could be colored by that, but I do like the movie. Yeah. It's a fun movie. Like, it is absolutely a fun movie.
It's off the walls, for sure.
Oh, for sure. But the Letterboxd review where that person was just like, I've decided this movie is not good, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at. Like, it is technically not a great movie, but, like, it's okay. Like, mm-hmm. I can, like...
See, this is where we disagree. I think it's a good movie.
Okay.
I think it's really good.
Okay, explain.
I personally think, like, that over-the-topness and, like, the kind of in-your-face nature of it, normally that fails. Normally that fails really, really hard. In this instance, I think they did it really, really just well. Like, it's a polished version of something that so many directors and writers go for and fuck up.
Like, big time.
But they do it very slickly. And, yeah, there's, like, too many white people. But it's okay, because to me, the fact that they seal it off without giving you a resolution means that they were unafraid the whole time to go there. So
to kill everyone?
Well, yeah, to like, because I feel like in a lot of these, they're still just like, oh, well, everything's going to just go back to normal.
Okay.
But they literally went like, oh, no, the world's fucked now. Like, they didn't give like the hero wins or anything like that. There's no villain to really take out. The heroes get taken out, too. Like, nobody really survives besides deities that you got introduced to in the last 5 minutes. Like, yeah. It's kind of bold. It's bold in that respect.
Interesting.
So yeah, I really love it. I think that like the creativity behind the creature designs and the way the events were sequenced out.
See, here's the thing. It's like that sequence that I was talking about where like you get to see all the cool fucking creatures like in the basement or whatever. That I love. Like I think that's super creative and I think the concept is cool.
Yeah.
I just think it's like, I don't know. I have conflicted feelings because, like, I want to like this movie. I really want to fucking like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there are parts of it where it's just, like, I feel like the parts of the movie where they're, like, little, like, elbow jabs. Like, where, like, basically when they were writing this movie, they were just like, huh, you get it? You get it? And if you're watching it as, like, a seasoned horror fan, you're going to, like, be there and be like, oh, I get that.
Yeah, clearly.
But then it's going to feel like it's, like, for, like, some of the reviews that I put in there, like, for some of the critics, like, it's going to feel totally over your head because everyone's going to be laughing and you're not in on the joke.
Yeah.
And I think, not that it's unfair necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it does a disservice because horror is already treated as like such an exclusionary genre where a lot of people like a lot of gatekeeping already in the genre as is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by making a movie that has so many inside jokes, and it makes it's hard to understand if you're not privy to a lot of like the little details. I think that makes it hard to watch or like...
You think so, though?
I think so for some people. Like, if I were to take, like, I don't know, my brother, who, like, doesn't have a lot of experience with horror movies, I think he would like it, but I think a lot of it would go over his head. And
he's missing out on some of the content from it or some of the appeal.
And I don't know if that would necessarily help or hurt the movie necessarily, but I think if I were to sit him down and be like, okay, now here's all the shit that you missed and here's why it's so fucking funny and... I think that would make some people feel dumb.
Guess, I don't know. I've watched this with people who aren't that...
Okay, guys, we disagree.
Yeah.
We disagree. The podcast over. Thanks for listening.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I like it when we disagree.
Yeah. Well, to me, I feel like it's entertaining enough throughout its run that might not be an issue. And then also, even so, it's the most basic horror tropes. Like, it's not, like, the biggest, like, and this is, like, super inside. Maybe it's the rape tree.
Maybe
what
the
you saw on a board, you know?
It's true.
But, like, everything else is, I think, the most generic version of what slashers and what people kind of, like...
I accept that.
Well, that what people who are probably anti-horror are like, oh, because these movies do this. Like, oh, this movie does that. But it does it in a way that's totally not actually what you think it is.
Yeah.
So, I think it's... The on-the-nose aspect of it is enough to where it kind of circumvents that. If it was of a less well-made movie, then it would be an issue. But I think because it's such a winky, kind of like, slick production, it kind of goes around that. But at least for me.
All right. You know what? I'll give you that. Okay, so what did it do well with the horror tropes then? And what do you feel it did poorly?
I feel like... Half the characters were good, half of them were bad.
Okay.
So, I didn't really care
I agree with that.
Yeah, Dana is kind of the mix right down the middle.
Yeah, I think, little column A, little column B.
Yeah, but Marty and Kurt are good.
Yes.
What's her face and what's his face?
Oh, I like Jules.
Oh, Jules?
Yeah.
She's okay to me. I don't know.
She's just fine. I think it's just funny. I just love, like, the stereotypically, like, mm-hmm. bottom blonde, like, the whore trope or whatever. Yeah. I just think they're funny characters.
See, that's the thing. Okay, so here's my justification for that. So, when it comes to the two I talked about, Chris Hemsworth and the stoner, I haven't seen too many trope versions of that are as good as those two. Okay. But in terms of the other ones, I've seen better.
Okay, do you think it's because they're actually fleshed out as characters, or do you think it's because their tropes are done to such an extreme that you can't help but like them because they're funny?
I think they're fleshed out a little more. They're giving more screen time.
Well, okay, like, then that's not the fault of the character. I think that's the fault of the writing.
No, it's not, but that's the thing. Like, that's probably why I'm saying the movie does that good and that not good.
Gotcha.
Because think of, like, the character I'd be comparing her to would be, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar in I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Gotcha.
That style, which was way better done. You know? Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of stoners that are as good as this stoner.
Drew Barrymore and Scream.
Or Drew Barrymore and Scream. Same thing. So, yeah. That's deficiency in the movie itself right there. They should, I feel like, have given her a little bit
McGowan
more.
Or Rose McGowan and Scream.
Oh, Rose McGowan for sure.
Yeah. I think more McGowan than Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm. But, like, that's the thing. Like, that type of character, I think, deserves a little more of, like, a personality given to her, I guess.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will agree that her character is a little bit, like, it's very trope-heavy, and it's very, like, two-dimensional in
that
sense.
But, like, a little too much.
Oh, okay. See, that's what I kind of, because, like, if you're going to lean into, like, the absurdity of these tropes, mm-hmm. I think, why not go all the way? Like, that's why I like the stoner so much.
Yeah. No, he went pretty hard. Yeah.
Because, like, he's just so ridiculous that it's just, like mm-hmm. no one actually is, like, that big of a stoner.
That's true. But I mean, he also gets a lot more plot significance than the other characters. There's
it's
more
true.
Time for him
yes.
to be like, you know,
yes,
that.
Agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree with that. Same thing with Dana. Like, you know from the beginning she's the final girl because mm-hmm. she's meek and she wants to bring books on vacation. Who the fuck does that?
Yeah, she plays the virgin trope, like, hard.
Yes, mm-hmm. agreed.
But God, I hate the dude that they pair her up with. I don't like, he's just so...
Oh, and he has this, like, nice guy energy, and then, yeah. like, the two-way mirror thing.
Two-way mirror thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and then also, I learned this, Drew Goddard also directed Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh, really?
Yes, I wanted to see it.
I want
it.
To watch that, too.
It also has Chris Hemsworth in it.
Interesting, that makes sense.
So he has a type. Yeah, but also, two-way mirrors also, or one-way mirrors also play a prominent feature in that movie.
He's definitely
well.
Refined his style, I would say, since
so,
then. Yeah.
Apparently that is a stylistic thing of his that I think is interesting. But yeah, the horror tropes that it does well, obviously, the sex equals death trope, mm-hmm. the
creepy basements.
Creepy basements.
Yeah.
The cabin in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, zombies. You know, all the, I like the idea of someone being behind the scenes pulling all the switches and levers
yeah.
to make it happen. Like, I think that, like, that's what I do like about the movie. Like, it's a fun thought exercise.
You know what, though? I can kind of see your point here a little more now that I think about it. Because when we talked about the zombie stuff, the general cabin in the woods nature
uh-huh.
of it, we covered a movie that does all of this way, way more, like, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what movie it was?
You're going to tell me.
Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yes!
Tucker, like, when I think about now, like, the lever stuff, I'm like, oh, of course, you know, to me, it's still great, but...
It does it in a way that isn't so fucking in your face about it.
It does, yeah, Tucker and Dale plays out more like a movie organically.
It's an actual movie,
yeah.
This is meta as meta can fucking be.
It is. Like, but
this is a meta movie. Tucker mm-hmm. and Dale versus Evil is a horror comedy. This is supposed to be a horror comedy, but this is too meta. Like, this is a thought exercise.
Yeah. But I think what the big difference also between those two is, like, the level of scale is significantly different.
Yeah.
So I think because of how high concept this is.
I love Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Yeah. See, that has more heart because it's more down to earth.
Well, also, like, they're actual characters. Like, you're not watching them like they're tropes.
Mm-hmm.
You're, like,
even the killer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, when you're watching Tucker and Dale versus Evil, like, they are actual fucking characters versus fucking A Cabin in the Woods, where it's like, okay.
Archetypes.
You know these are all archetypes.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But I feel like, again, with the sense of scale, that's kind of where the difference layer is.
Yes.
Because the concept itself for this one's so large scale, you need more time to develop
the whole plot.
The structure behind it. Yeah.
Agreed.
Where Tucker and Dale, you can sit back and be like, okay,
this is
these two are wonderful. I love them.
They can do nothing wrong. No, mm-hmm. Cabin in the Woods, I will give you that. Like, yeah, I agree with you on that. See, we can come.
No, we can have to explain ourselves. That's it. We both have things to learn. We've done this forever.
We're friends.
Yeah. Just toss the claw. No.
Bye forever. Go watch a cabin, or go watch. Watch a Cabin in the Woods too. But like, watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
Definitely watch. Yeah,
it is a delight.
I would actually say if you're gonna have to pick between the two of them, watch Tucker and Dale versus Evil.
It's like, true
for sure.
It's a delight.
Mm-hmm.
Did it do the horror industry or like horror films in general justice? Do you think?
They did horror tropes justice. The films, it's not film specific. It doesn't feel like really. Like it just.
Really.
I mean, it does slashers, I guess, justice. Yeah.
Really? Okay.
But I mean, like, I can't think of, like, a direct... There's no, like, slasher icon going through there. I can't pinpoint it to, like... It does general tropes good, I think.
Really?
I feel puzzled. Like, what?
I don't agree with you at all.
Oh, go, by all means.
I don't think so at all. I mean, again, this is kind of circles back to why, like, whether or not I like my thoughts on the movie. For me... You can. It's very, very obviously pulling some very heavy influences from The Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
Very heavily pulling some influences from like Friday the 13th and like pretty much most slasher movies.
Yeah.
Obviously, like strictly on like a trope fashion where it's just like a group of friends doing stupid shit. Cabin Fever also.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get to like the torture porn stuff and like all that. I personally think you would be better off watching those movies.
Interesting.
Like, I would...
I feel like those are criteria for watching this one.
Right. Like, I would... Well, exactly. But that circles back to my entire point where it's just, mm-hmm. like, you have to almost have, like, a reading list.
Like an encyclopedic knowledge of it?
Well, not encyclopedic, like, knowledge, but I feel like you have to take, like, a fucking mini course
mm-hmm.
of, like, with, like, a reading list of, like, okay, here's a list of movies that you should watch before you watch A Cabin in the Woods so you fucking get it.
So you probably get, like, the maximum experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And I unless it's a fucking sequel, I mm-hmm. personally don't think that, like, you should go into a movie... That, like that should be a thing. But, like, again, different strokes. But I think that... See, this is also kind of hard because it's, like, I think it drives those tropes to such, like, ridiculous extremes that it's, like, okay, yes, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like,
it has so many of them. That's the thing. Like, I think it has so many that kind of develops enough of its own identity because it has so many to pull from.
I think that... Joss Whedon and Drew Goddard set out to, like, that quote that I read in the beginning where they were just like, this is something that we view as, like,
mm-hmm.
shitty in the industry, so we're going to do it to such an extreme that other people realize how ridiculous it is, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it kind of, like, almost rubs me the wrong way because it's, like, everyone knows it's shitty, too. Like, no one is disagreeing with that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's kind of, like, established. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can't, like, I don't know. You can't, Rome was not, like, built in a day.
You're not going to be able to tear it down so quickly.
No.
Well, I will actually, a little caveat here. So, my first experience watching this film was with two non-horror fans.
Interesting. Okay.
Two, like, they just didn't watch horror. They didn't like it. They didn't like it.
Did they like the movie?
Yes. They loved the movie, actually.
Probably because it made fun of everything that they thought was, like, stupid about horror movies.
But, I mean, they didn't have that encyclopedic knowledge, though, or that base. They just kind of knew from a general mm-hmm. understanding of, like, stereotypes.
Right.
Like, what people would say about horror. Like, they anytime they'd watch it, they didn't give a shit. But, like, shit like The Merman mm-hmm. or, like, the actual Office aspect you're talking about, that actually did appeal to them a lot.
Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's just, like... Like what I said, where it's just mm-hmm. like if someone doesn't have, or it's people who don't have, I have conflicting feelings. Like,
no, it's fine.
Of the
you
day,
can. You're allowed to.
I know.
It's okay.
No,
it's okay.
I know. I'm not.
You're looking up for other folks. I get it. See, I'm sitting here just like, eh.
I fucking like the movie. But, well, I mean, I'm looking out for baby Alex when I was 18 years old, mm-hmm. seeing this movie for the first time in 2013 when I was just like, this is stupid. Well, no, I take it back. I did actually really like the movie, but I didn't have any of that knowledge. I did have the very, very basic, like, horror trope mm-hmm. knowledge. But this is also back when I thought that that horror in general, like, this is when I thought that horror was very, like, sexist and very, like, mm-hmm. yeah. Like,
I mean, yeah.
I mean, it is.
It is, yeah.
But no, I was like, ardently against.
You were like on a crusade against it.
Yes, like yeah. I was just like, I chose to actively not be a horror fan mm-hmm. because of its issues with sexism and misogyny, and then I was just like, but I like the movies and I can critique them this way,
and you'll get a podcast out of it eventually, yeah,
and many books, and now we're here. So I think mm-hmm. like that's kind of where I was coming from watching it, because I was just like, they took these tropes to the ultimate extreme,
mm-hmm.
where it's just like someone is literally pulling the trigger and like. Or, like, pulling the levers and triggers and everything and, like, hand-picking these people because they fit the tropes. And mm-hmm. obviously, everyone knows at the end of the day, no one fits these tropes in perfect carbon copies. Like,
yeah.
even, like, the virgin. Like, she's just, like, a virgin.
Yeah.
And she's just like, we'll take what we can get. And they just picked her because she's meek and awkward and kind of introverted, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And she fit the trope enough. And they were just like, okay, fine, whatever.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that brings me another point, too, because as much as those friends, they weren't as big horror fans, right?
Right.
I think the type of horror that they're pulling from is such a part of Americana.
Yeah.
That because this is an American-ass production, we're going to know innately enough to get something out of the message of the movie. Like, you'll get something out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I accept that.
Just because of how we live on a societal front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving on. does this film have any remakeability? And if so, how would you want to see it redone? Who would be in it?
No.
No?
I don't think it could be remade.
Well, also, this is from, like, 2012.
Yeah, no, we're that's eight
it's
years.
It's 8 years.
Yeah, I think horror would need to change a lot more over the next, like...
Agreed.
Yeah, and then it's, like... There'd be a whole different crop of stars by then. There's no way.
And different tropes, different, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're many, many, many years, if ever, away. I agree.
Yeah.
Well, that was easy.
That was a fast question.
We can agree on something.
Yeah.
Okay, rate this movie out of 5 collapsible bongs.
Oh my god, 4 collapsible bongs for me. Yeah.
I'm gonna give it 3.
3, okay, that works. Yeah, that makes sense. I say 4. It's a solid 4 for me.
I have my critiques, but also for the most part, like, it's not like a 2.5. Like, it's not a down the middle, but it's a little bit above it. Like, I do it. Mm-hmm. I do like this movie. Contrary to the sound clips that I'm sure could be isolated from this fucking episode, I do like this movie. I think it's fun. I think it's a great introductory movie
to, like, meta horror.
Yeah, to meta horror, but also, like, someone who, like, does barely know the tropes, and it's just like, okay, you want to watch a horror comedy that, like,
mm-hmm.
really shows you how ridiculous this shit is, because, like, most of the time when you watch you know, like, the classics, quote unquote, of, like, horror, you know, you can most of us laugh mm-hmm. at like how silly it is. And
exactly, that's a good point,
you know.
Yes.
Like, most, we're not, like, actually, like, believing these tropes that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that it's just like, it's kind of like, again, in a joke within the horror fandom.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a nod there for sure.
Yeah. So,
and then but I will also say, if you get the chance, if you had to pick between this and Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, you go Tucker and Dale vs. Evil.
It's so fun and wholesome, and just it makes me happy.
I feel like also, though, like, what they're going for is close enough that if you do pick Tucker and Dale, you're gonna have to probably wait a while before you watch this one. Don't watch them back to because you're not gonna get the full impact of this.
No, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Alan Tudyk also in Whedon vs. Stuff.
Oh, Whedon. He's in Firefly.
He's also in Dollhouse.
Interesting. Okay.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice. All coming together.
It is.
Do you have anything else you want to add before we wrap up? About the movie?
You know what? I will also say, if you're feeling either this or Tucker and Dale, you know, whatever you choose to watch, the next meta horror you should watch after that is Scream. And then that's mm-hmm. it. And then you're good. Then you understand horror forever.
And then that's all you ever need.
That's all you ever need. But that's it.
It's honestly a good foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That is a good foundation of, like, funny, but you get the tropes. Scream is more like actually scary.
Well, it's like a film. Mm-hmm. It's like a film.
It's
film.
A capital F film. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we completely tore this movie apart. But please watch it if you haven't. I do actually. I highly recommend. Mm-hmm. So
I endorse as well.
Even if it's just fun to make fun of. I do recommend it.
And just, you know, lots of white folks. Remember that. Like an absurd amount.
It is a Joss Whedon movie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is pretty homogenized, I will say.
It is milk.
Yes.
It is white as hell.
And also, next week's movie is going to be white as hell also, because it's a Kevin Williamson movie.
If you want, like, Scream light. So, speaking of next week, well, actually, first off, let's close out this, but thank you everyone for joining us. That yes. was The Cabin in the Woods from 2012, directed by Drew Goddard.
Mm-hmm.
For next week, your little hint, we talked about it, kind of. We talked about Kevin Williamson.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Scream. It's a Scream era movie for sure.
Yes, definitely.
The two growing up were always kind of homogenized in my head.
Yeah.
So it'll be fun.
I'm directly comparable.
I've never seen this movie.
What?
Ever.
I saw this in theaters. Jesus.
You're old.
I know. No, like, yeah, this is one of those ones where the family took us. Yeah.
Okay.
All the cousins.
Wow.
All the cousins.
Yeah, no, I've never seen this movie. I'm very excited.
Oh my God, this is like... I'm excited for you also.
It'll be fun.
Yeah.
But join us next week to learn whatever that is. It's
not a 5-star movie.
Oh, no.
This is...
It's summer trash, for sure.
It's trash. It's fun, but it's, like, really fun trash.
I love fun trash. You know this about me.
I know.
I love fun trash. So...
Capital F, capital T, just saying.
Capital F. So I hope you join us next week for that. Let's see. Just some quick housekeeping notes. We mentioned it at the top of the episode, but in case you missed it, this is our season finale month.
Yep.
So let's see. So this July, holy shit, welcome to July.
I know.
So next month. The month of August, we will be taking the month off from the podcast to kind of recuperate and write like mad people,
mm-hmm.
And work on some projects for you guys. But that means we will not be releasing episodes for the entire month of August. And that's our season break. And then we'll be coming back the first week of September for a brand new season 3.
I know. Oh my gosh.
That's terrifying. Anyway, but other than that, I think that's it. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us this week. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It helps tremendously, and it also just lifts our spirits.
It does.
And then if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest with everything going on with us, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And then you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find Anthony on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter and Facebook. Not Twitter and Facebook. Jeez, that'd be weird. Don't find us on Facebook. That would be weird. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. That's totally acceptable. Other than that, have a good rest of your week, and we will catch you next time. And until then, don't go into any weird fucking cellars.
Yeah, and appreciate your coffee bongs.
Bye.